It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
News Podcast presents Brett Baer's All-Star Panel.
America's got to be in the lead if you want to deal with these threats. We're going to lead.
The morning is over. The Shiva is done. And if you're a conservative, you should be optimistic.
You know, my main priority right now is making sure that it delivers for the American people.
We have to make our country great again, and I will do that.
I think the president gets criticized by people all the time for the stuff he says, by people who ignore what he does.
Now, Fox's chief political anchor, Brett Baer.
A new threat of escalation in the Middle East this week after two top Iranian generals were killed by an Israeli airstrike on the Iranian consulate in Syria. In response, Iran has vowed to retaliate. And while the war between Russia and Ukraine continues, House Republicans are at odds about how to move forward with funding. Though House Speaker Mike Johnson says providing foreign aid is a priority, others like Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene from Georgia threaten to make moves to oust the speaker if an aid bill comes near the House floor.
When it comes to the supplemental, we've been working to build that consensus. When we return after this work period, we'll be moving a product. We're not just giving foreign aid. We're setting it up in a relationship where they can provide it back to us when the time is right.
He should not bring funding for Ukraine. That would also go against what the American people want.
And here at home, President Biden is headed to Baltimore in the aftermath of the Francis Scott Key Bridge collapse last week. And though the president has vowed to rebuild the bridge as swiftly as possible, how will the economy adjust to the absence of that port that typically saw over $100 million worth of trade pass through daily? To discuss all this and more, we bring in our panel, former State Department spokesperson Morgan Ortegas, Politico congressional reporter Olivia Beavers, and Fox News political analyst Juan Williams. Okay, Morgan, I guess to begin, is this an escalation in the Middle East, or was there already an escalation?
Yeah, I mean, I think the escalation already happened on October 7th, but even before October 7th, Brett, you saw the Iranians and their proxies have acted without impunity over the past 3 years in the Middle East. And now we have just become accustomed to things that we should never be accustomed to. Things like ballistic missiles and suicide drones being shot at our U.S. Navy ships, troops, American troops being killed in Jordan, again, by this equipment, by these drones that are supplied by the Iranian regime. I can tell you from my own personal experience in the Trump administration working for Mike Pompeo that the only thing that this regime responds to is the credible threat of force, which the Israelis executed on yesterday. I would also say that this just proves that every time the United States Department of Defense decides to hit empty warehouses or decides to go after Iranian proxies, that it is not the same as hitting the Quds Force. If you want to get the attention of the Iranians, you have to go directly after them. Hitting their proxies in the region, hitting empty warehouses does nothing to deter them.
Now, Olivia, how does the Hill look at this? And is the messaging out of the administration really concerned about escalation by Iran and whomever else, Israel included, sinking in?
I mean, I think that Republicans want to be as hawkish as they can with, you know, after October 7th, they feel like Iran has been largely involved with Hamas waging that assault and starting with Israel. And it's not the first time Israel has really gone back and you know, done their own sort of attacks in Syria against Iran. But on the Hill, I think there's always sort of an appetite among Republicans for President Biden to be at least a little bit more hawkish in this regard. He's, as we've seen, had to walk sort of a much finer line with his party, with progressives raising concerns about Palestinians and their well-being in Gaza, and, you know, trying to kind of call for them to limit Israel's attacks and for more aid.
Speaking of more aid, Juan, this is a conundrum because of the Republicans as it stands now. House Speaker Johnson is going to put forward possibly an aid bill for Israel and Ukraine, and he risks losing his job to do it.
Well, he really does, because as you pointed out, Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene has introduced a resolution that could cost him his job, that would oust him. You know, it is a difficult situation that he's trying to handle. He's on a high wire here, and he's got a number of people in his caucus who are genuinely concerned that there is too much money going to Ukraine. And so he has some proposals that he's considering, according to reports, including loaning the money to Ukraine or seizing Russian assets and then transferring those assets to Ukraine. And, you know, he could also break up the vote, right, so that it would be a vote on Ukraine aid as separate from aid to Israel. And I should throw in here aid to Taiwan as they confront a possible threat from China. But it's the Ukraine aid that is the big problem right now. And you have, I should note, among Democrats, some resistance to giving aid to Israel at this moment, because they see Israel as being very aggressive in its handling of the Palestinians. So I think that Speaker Johnson is not only dealing with Republicans and their concerns, he's got to deal with Democrats and their concerns. And one last possibility would be that he goes to the Democrats and says, let's suspend the rules and let's have, I think that would take three quarters of all the, you know, three quarters of all the Congress to vote to suspend the rules. And then he could have a vote on separate packages. And of course, Democrats would invite that, but I don't know that he would invite it. And I don't know how many Democrats would go along given their concerns about the money flowing to Israel.
When it comes to Ukraine aid, Morgan, do you put the onus on President Biden for not kind of talking about it more? Or do you think that doesn't matter in the Republican caucus anyway, to try to sway public opinion?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure how much President Biden talking about it is going to sway some of the Republicans that are against it. I would tell you what may actually get more Republicans on the side is this measure that Speaker Johnson has come up with that would essentially tie Ukraine aid to the reversal of the what many Republicans considered the disastrous LNG export ban. That might be something that you can get Republicans to move on. And also, I think having a plan and a strategy, which is something that we've really lacked over the past 2 years, even people who are incredibly supportive of Ukraine, people like me who feel like the Biden administration has slow walked the aid the entire time and has essentially forced this war to be drug out by, you know, with the ATACMs, the Abrams tanks, the F-16s, you know, everything that they've asked for is a day late and dollar short. We're told by the administration for 3 to 5 to 6 months that they're not giving the weapons. And then finally, they relent. So I don't know, you could be supportive of Ukraine on one hand, but on the other hand, also say this was a massive strategic failure by Biden to deter Putin from invading the first place. And they haven't executed the war from a strategic perspective in a way in which that would earn much confidence.
Olivia, it doesn't seem like the threat to vacate the office of the speaker that only one congressperson could bring up, and Marjorie Taylor Greene has. It doesn't seem like that threat holds much water with Speaker Johnson. I think he thinks he's the only one that can get the votes right now.
Yeah, and you know, I actually spoke to Marjorie Taylor Greene earlier today, and she does not seem like she's backing off on this. She got into the conversations she's had with Mike Johnson, and those are actually very minimal. It's them reaching out, trying to coordinate a time to talk, but she basically says she doesn't expect him to course correct. And if he doesn't change his tune on Ukraine aid, then she thinks that more Republicans will keep joining in with her. I think a really big question, which we saw with Kevin McCarthy, is what will Democrats do? And some have signaled, and yet I would also preface that we need to watch what leadership, Democratic leadership decides, but they preface that if Johnson does do, as they say, the right thing, then they've indicated they've been more willing to, you know, not vote to oust him and maybe make themselves scarce if there was a vote, sort of a referendum vote on his leadership. So that's sort of a big kind of point that we're looking at moving forward.
Panel, we'll hold it right there. I'm Charles Payne. Listen to my Unstoppable Prosperity podcast so I can get you making money right now. Whether stocks are hitting new all-time highs or in free-fall mode, opportunities abound. So why are so many potential investors still sitting on the sidelines? In a new season of my podcast, I'm going to get you in the game. After 38 years on Wall Street, I'm ready to impart some lessons and get you invested in the greatest wealth-generating machine in history. Listen anytime, everywhere at foxbusinesspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast.
Meantime, Juan, President Biden heading to Baltimore to see the bridge. Some of his critics point that it took him a long time to get to East Palestine, Ohio, for that train derailment and crash. But he is going to Baltimore, and he is coming with him a pledge to use federal dollars for the fixing of that. There are some people wondering, you know, what the bottom line is on the responsibility of the tanker, the company, the insurance, that, you know, as opposed to federal tax dollars.
I think a lot of people are wondering that. I don't think that's so much political. I think there are lots of Republicans who have been quick to say, hey, what about the owners of the dolly, the boat, the tanker that crashed into the bridge, the Key Bridge? And also, you know, what about the insurance companies? What do they pay? Why is the president so quick to say that he's got to pledge the U.S. government's financial support to repair the bridge? But on the other hand, I think this is very important. It is a economic lifeline for so many corporations, industries, not only in the United States, but globally. And of course, for all the people who work in terms of those ports, terminals around Baltimore. I think it might be just outside one of the top 10 ports in the United States and the top port for cars coming into the United States. So you have that kind of national, global interest that, of course, the president of the United States in his leadership role needs to be concerned with. But the larger issue about the insurance companies, I think everybody thinks, hey, you know, let them do their thing. And why not hold these people responsible for a clear act of negligence, the owners of the boat?
Yeah, I suppose you could hurry up and start rebuilding, Morgan, in the effort to get the economy moving because of that port and that bridge, and then still recoup money. I suppose that's a possibility.
Yeah, I assume so. I think this one is going to be, I think, more from a political perspective, how people perceive that President Biden handles a tragedy. And I think clearly his team learned, as you mentioned, the excellent reference from what happened in East Palestine, that ignoring it and not being on top of it and appearing aloof to people's concerns was not something that they could repeat in Maryland.
Well, yes, and Ohio is a little deeper red than Maryland's blue, but to be too cynical about that. Olivia, as we wrap up here, a quick roundabout about the presidential race and where we're seeing both sides kind of stake their grounds. The former president's obviously pretty preoccupied with his legal troubles in the beginning of that courtroom battle in New York on April 15th. But the president's team seemed to feel a little bit more confident or wind in their back based on polls they're seeing.
I mean, I think it's still very early, but we are watching the polls after, you know, President Biden has had a low approval rating ranging around the, you know, 39%. He's been working to try to sell his achievements, arguing that the economy is better when he's in office. And, you know, I think he still is pretty weak on the border in terms of polling and has to be working on that and still his age issue image problem. Donald Trump isn't just facing his legal woes. I think he also is going to have to work to, you know, try to make more of a big tent within his own party. My colleague and I did some reporting on this, and he recently pushed the idea of someone primarying Laura Lee, who is the only Florida Republican to primary DeSantis. But it's broader than that. He needs to figure out ways to try to pull in the Nikki Haley voters and who could be pivotal in states like North Carolina, which he won last time. So it's both, they both have some work to do, and who can do it best, we're gonna see in November.
Yeah, Juan, how much do you think money makes a difference in a race like this where both sides are pretty staked out? Obviously, commercials, there's a point at which, you know, they go over people's heads, but money could make a difference in get out the vote operations around swing states.
Absolutely. I think you're already seeing that the Biden campaign, which is doing very well right now with fundraising, had that celebrated event with Presidents Clinton and President Obama in New York, are already setting up shops, opening offices in several states, including some purple states. You know, and you don't see that coming from the Trump campaign at this juncture. In fact, President Trump, former President Trump, out on the campaign trail today in Michigan, Wisconsin, and, you know, he hasn't been campaigning for the last month, given all of his legal and financial troubles. And, you know, he's being derided by people on the left for selling golden sneakers and Bibles. But money does make a difference. And when you were talking about advertising, but I thought to myself, you know, he's got to spend money now in a place like Florida, because given the abortion ruling there that's going to put abortion on the ballot in Florida in November, you hear the Biden people say, oh, you know, we think we might have a chance to win Florida. Well, they weren't having that conversation before, and it's going to require some energy and money from the Trump people to respond if the Biden people spend money there.
Yeah. Last thing, Morgan, I mean, is abortion and threat to democracy more powerful politically than immigration, border issues, and how you feel about the economy?
Well, I guess we will see in November. I can tell you that we were, the Republicans were definitely surprised in the outcome of the midterms in November 22, because that it did seem to play out into President Biden's favor. Saying that, you know, you've got plenty of successful Republicans like Republican Governor Ron DeSantis, you know, Georgia. You know, you could go state by state where you've had pro-life governors that were successfully, very successfully, you know, reelected. And I think that's what Republicans will point to. But that's clearly where the whether battle lines are drawn on. I'd rather be in a position where I have a record of accomplishment and achievement to run from, to run my campaign from. I don't think President Biden has that. I think he's got to use scare tactics, scaring the American people about abortion, about January 6th, because he just has a really poor record to run on. And that's reflected, by the way, in the Fox News polling that we were talking about just yesterday when I was on Outnumbered. What was really surprising to me in the new Fox News polling, Brett, is the number of independents that are you know, that give Biden terrible rankings, especially on the economy, especially on immigration, especially on the border. So it'll be a showdown to see, do Americans care more about their pocketbook and what they're paying at the grocery store, or the scare tactics from Biden and his team?
Yeah, and we are told the former president is going to make a speech about the A word, the issue of abortion, next week, which is will be interesting to see, because it's such a hot button topic at a lot of races, not just presidential. Panel, thanks. Now for a bit of history. April 2nd, 1917, President Woodrow Wilson asked Congress for a declaration of war against Germany. Though President Wilson had initially intended to stay neutral while war raged in Europe, leading to his 1916 re-election slogan, "He kept us out of the war," by 1917, war felt inevitable. After the president delivered an address to a joint session of Congress, the resulting vote led to an official declaration of war against Germany, marking the United States' first steps into World War I. That'll do it for this week. You can hear more of this series at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you download podcasts. Make sure to leave a rating and a review. We want to hear from you. For Morgan, Olivia, and Juan, I'm Brett Baer. We'll see you next time.
Listen ad-free with a Fox News Podcast Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts, and Amazon Prime members can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app.
Kudlow on Fox Business is now on the go for podcast fans. Get key interviews with the biggest business newsmakers of the day. The Kudlow Podcast will be available on the go after the show every weekday at foxbusinesspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.